We carry these phones in our pockets, speaking of technology and its curses. And these phones can show us everything. The wars across the world, the disasters across the country, the tragedies down the street. Just yesterday, trying to eat lunch at my father-in-law's house. We've about to get in the pool to go swimming, and my phone buzzes because it wants me to see that somebody had a car wreck that was a near fatality just down the street from where we live. I was currently out of the state. I was in Maryland, and all of a sudden my phone is telling me, you need to know about this car wreck in Virginia. It's always there. It's always telling us about all the suffering. We now know more about and he can put his finger here, but then it sprouts a leak over here, and then eventually you run out of fingers and toes, and you just can't keep up with all of it. Over time, that kind of awareness can produce a kind of weariness. Not because you don't care, but because there's just simply too much to care about. There are too many problems to solve, too many hurts to heal, too many wounds that are too deep for easy answers. And we learn to cope with that the best way we can. Sometimes that's withdrawing. Sometimes it's becoming more cynical. Sometimes we settle into a permanent outrage. And sometimes we just stop paying attention because paying attention hurts too much. And beneath all of this lies an assumption that we rarely say out loud. Surely someone else can take care of it. All of these problems you're constantly being shown, they're above your pay grade. There are experts for that. There are professionals. There are leaders. There are institutions. Surely someone better equipped than me can step in and fix this problem that's bigger than me. After all, what kind of a difference can one ordinary person really make? What can one person do in the face of so much need? What can one church do in a world so full of suffering? But that question lingers. And what happens when compassion meets a world that is too broken to fix? The word of the Lord from Matthew chapter 9. Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed, they were helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest." And I need you to notice something that's not said right here, but seems to make the most sense. If you're talking to someone, and in the very next sentence is, then he summoned those someones, that means in between in that period and double space, if you're using a typewriter, in that period and double space, at some point they left to go do something else. He has to call them back, yes? Theoretically, what happens right here in the story that doesn't get said is Jesus says, go ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers. So they go off to pray, to ask for laborers. And then, while they're doing that, he summons the 12 disciples and gives them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip, Bartholomew, Thomas, Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, and Simon, the Cananean, and even Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not take a road leading to Gentiles, and do not enter a Samaritan town, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those with a skin disease. Cast out demons. You received without payment. You give without payment. Jesus travels through cities and villages, teaching, proclaiming, healing. And Matthew tells us that something deeper is happening beneath all of those actions. Jesus sees the crowds. He really sees them, not as crowds, but as a bunch of people gathered in one spot. Not simply as a mass of people, not as interruptions, not as problems to solve, or security risks or threats. He really sees the individuals in the masses. And when he does that, he is moved with compassion because he sees them as harassed and helpless people, like sheep without a shepherd. That phrase carries more weight than we often realize. These are not simply people having a bad day. These are people who have been worn down, weathered, rusted. These are people carrying burdens that are too heavy to carry. People who are longing for guidance, care, hope. In many ways, they sound a lot like, I think, same kind of crowds we have today. And then comes the surprising turn. He says that the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. And at first, that sounds like an observation, just a, hey, did you guys notice? There's a lot of people who need help here. Perhaps it's even a complaint. Gosh, I've cured so many, and there's still so many. And then he tells the disciples to pray that the Lord of the harvest would send laborers into the harvest. And I'm sure they didn't see it coming. There's no way they saw it coming. And they said, that's a good idea, Jesus. We're going to go ask for somebody to go fix those problems. And before they can finish asking, before they can finish their prayer, Jesus does something unexpected, and he calls them over, and he says, hey, did you guys know that you're the laborers you were just asking for? You are literally the answer to your own prayer. And I'm sure they felt tricked. They must have felt duped. Just a little. And he sends them, of all people. The answer to the prayer becomes the people who are praying it. The laborers that they are literally asking God to send turn out to be themselves. They set themselves up. We expect God to solve problems, but we expect God to solve problems from a distance. We expect compassion to remain the work of specialists, heroes, experts. And Jesus has this funny tendency of placing his own mission into the hands of untrained, ordinary people. These disciples are ordinary people. They are fishermen. Odds are they're not even of legal drinking age in this country. These are teenage boys. One of them is a tax collector. So at least they've got a math nerd. But that's literally the only expertise listed. These men who are still learning who Jesus is, who are still learning what this kingdom means, who don't know what they're doing, somehow find themselves entrusted with the authority that they never would have dreamed to have claimed. They've now been given the ultimate security clearance, and they can now do things that Jesus does. They can cure every disease and every sickness. They can cast out demons. They can do the things that he did for them. And the old assumptions don't hold anymore. The crowds, they are still harassed and helpless. The needs, still overwhelmingly great. But now, the disciples discover that following Jesus means more than standing near him while he does amazing things. Being one of his followers now means being drawn into doing the work he's been doing. So far, they've been standing by him while he heals. Maybe they've been bouncers. Maybe they've been line organizers. I honestly believe it looks a bit like this. I imagine for most of their career with Jesus up until this point, if we're going to use Chick-fil-A as a metaphor, which now you all want Chick-fil-A on a Sunday, and I know that's not fair, but here we are. The disciples are the people who stand in the drive-through line with the iPads to take your order, to speed through the process, getting you to where you're trying to go. That's all they've done so far. Jesus was the guy who delivers the food. They can just help get you to him. But now, imagine going to Chick-fil-A and the people who are standing there with the iPads in the line already know what you need before you pull up and they just hand you your food. They are more important now, but not because they are important, but because Jesus has given them the authority to do the things that he's been doing. God's work in the world was never just gathering. It's always been the work of gathering. It's also been healing and restoring. And Jesus looks upon crowds that are harassed and helpless, and he refuses to leave them that way. So he gathers the scattered, he restores the broken, he brings near those who have been left on the margins. And perhaps most surprisingly of all, he then invites those people who have been healed and restored to start healing and restoring. It's one of the deepest mysteries of the kingdom of God, that God does not merely act upon the world from a distance. God draws people into his own compassion. And so the mission of Jesus becomes the mission of the disciples. They are not receiving his work anymore. Now they are expanding his work. The work of mercy has been shared with those who have been given it. Jesus entrusts ordinary people with holy work. Fishermen, tax collectors, government employees, contract and federal, men and women who are still learning what it means to be a follower of Jesus. The kingdom moves forward not through the strength of the disciples, but through their participation in the life of God. God's response to a hurting world is not only divine intervention. It is that, but it's not only divine intervention. It is divine participation. And now that participation extends through a people who have been gathered and sent. That's what he does. He gathers people, restores them, and sends them back out. Gathers people, heals them, and sends them back out. God's response to a hurting world is not distance. It's presence. Again and again throughout Scripture, God moves toward people rather than away from them. People move away from God, and then God just keeps getting closer. And in Jesus, we discover that God's presence often takes form in a community of people who are sent to embody mercy. The church, then, exists for more than gathering. Gathering matters. Worship matters. Community matters. Come together. Pray to the Lord of the harvest to send laborers. The church is a people formed by Christ to do just that. But the church is also a community of people formed by Christ to be sent into the world as the laborers, to embody God's presence. The Spirit gathers us into communion with Christ. But the Spirit never gathers us only for ourselves. The story never stops at praying for laborers. The same Spirit who forms a family also sends that family into the world. The Spirit creates a community that can then embody God's compassion in places where people feel harassed, helpless, forgotten, alone. That means the church cannot become merely a destination. We are not called simply to gather around Jesus and stay there. We are called to go into the kinds of places where Jesus would go. We are called to see the people there as Jesus would see them, not as crowds, but as individuals within that crowd. We're called to embody the mercy that we ourselves have received. Freely you have been given, freely you give. Forgive others as you have been forgiven. The harvest is plentiful. That means the world is not simply a problem to fear. The world is not a culture to resist. The world is a field in which God is already at work. And so the question is not whether God is working in the world. The question is whether we are willing to join in the work that God's already doing, to do the kinds of things that Jesus did, to love the kinds of people that he would love. Which begs a couple of questions. When was the last time you looked at a crowd of people and saw the harassed and the helpless? Who are the harassed and helpless? Who carries burdens that are unseen by others that Jesus would notice? What might he see in your neighbors that you might overlook? These are not questions that are reserved for experts or professionals. They're questions for ordinary disciples, questions for churches, questions for ordinary people who have been gathered by grace and sent in mercy. That's the pattern, gathered in grace, sent in mercy. He gathers us to show us grace, and he sends us to show mercy. Gathered and sent. Before we are sent into the world, we are gathered. Before we are asked to embody mercy, we must first receive it. The church does not create its own mission any more than it creates its own life. Everything begins with grace. Everything begins with Christ gathering a people, which brings us to this table. At this table, we discover again and again who we are. We are not a people who have earned a place. We are not a people who deserve something. We are not experts. We are not professionals in Christianity. We are not better than those disciples. We're just ordinary people. We do not make ourselves worthy. We are just people who have received mercy that we did not deserve. And at this table, strangers become family. Sinners receive grace. Disciples are nourished for the journey ahead. And every week, Christ gathers us here, not because we have it all figured out, but because we don't. Here at this table, we are reminded that the mercy we carry into the world was never ours. It's a mercy we have received, we've been entrusted with. The compassion that we offer to others is the compassion that we see on the cross. The grace that we give to others is the grace that was first given to us. And having been gathered together at this table by grace, having been fed with his love, we are sent out from this table into a world full of harassed and helpless people who are like a sheepfold without a shepherd. We are sent once more into the world to give compassion in the same way that he showed us compassion. That's why this ritual we do every week is mattering so much, because he gathers us so he can send us, and then he gathers us so he can send us, and we come in and out like a tide. And when we do that, when we gather here to remember the grace we have received, and we go back out and show it to others, when we come back again, we bring those we showed grace to. Then we go out again, and we come back with even more who've been shown grace, and so forth, and so on. And so it has been all the way to here. Just for one moment, indulge a historian for a second. And I would like you to realize that you are the result of this tide going in and out for 2,000 years. It's what you are. It's why you're here. Someone told you about the grace of Jesus. A parent, a grandparent, a coworker. Someone did. Someone in a Sunday school taught you. Someone at a water place cooler told you. Somebody somewhere showed you the grace of Jesus. And you were brought into a church, and then you were sent out. But before that, someone told them. And before that, someone told them. And before that, someone told them. And for 2,000 years, you are the end result of ordinary people taking the grace of Christ and taking it out from a church and then bringing you back into a church. Out and in, out and in. It's why I find low Sundays here so encouraging. By Low Sunday, I mean whenever the pews are really, really empty, and Grant or Lloyd has to tell everybody to scoot forward so we can hear each other singing. I love Sundays when the church is empty. And I know I'm not supposed to, but I really, really do. Because that means that the tide has gone out. That wherever you've all gone on that particular Sunday, you have taken the grace that you received here to someone else who needs it. And that is the most wonderful church-like thing any church could ever do. And I love the rhythm of this church because it does come and go, because all of you are coming and going. And when you go, you are sent into the world to carry that mercy. Yes, you go away on a work trip, or you get to go back home for the weekend for once in a while. You go. But I trust that when you do go, you take that grace of Christ that you receive at this table with you, and you get the opportunity to give it to somebody else who's helpless, harassed, on a margin, who's desperately in need of it. This is the rhythm of church, the in and out, the tide coming and going. It has brought you here, and long after all of us, it will have brought others, because we are participants in this rhythm of coming and going. Come to the table, receive grace, and whatever happens next today after the potluck, go and take that grace with you and give it to somebody else. Let's stand and sing.